Well, thank you. Just for clarity, anybody here from Blue Cross? No? Okay. Good. Not that it matters, just checking. Say it again.
Wasn't going to bring that up in the press.
Hard to have dueling ads when we're not advertising, but yeah, I get the point. So I wanted to share a little bit about our journey to, you know, accountable care or to risk-based care. Most of the stuff I'm going to say is not going to matter. It's just background and history. Mark's the guy who's really going to speak to the important issues. But, you know, if you were here a couple of weeks from now, this is what the place would look like. And what we think about as we're approaching our focus on our patients is what we call our bigger aim, and that's to get each person to their desired outcome, first without harm, also without waste, and always with an exceptional experience for each patient, family, and team member. So that's the underpinning of sort of who we are and why we're here. The leaves are nice, but we do it all year round, even when it's not. We serve an 18-county service area of what we refer to as Western North Carolina. So we have six hospitals around that area. Demographically, we're older, poorer, sicker, less likely to be insured than state and national averages. And the over 85 segment is the fastest growing subsegment of our population in total. This wasn't always true, but we now have 27 primary care clinics scattered around the 18 counties, largely following the population density of each of those geographies, and 23 specialty clinics that also follow the population density. When I got here 7 years ago, the focus that I really put forth, both because it was important to do and because it's easier to engage people on stuff that it's hard to argue against, and that was about quality. And Mission had always been a high-quality system, but I would argue, some would disagree, that it was high quality because it had incredibly talented people who followed a model of individual heroism about how you achieve quality. So it was the old school, not really driven by systematic processes, IT hardwiring of infrastructure, care process models, et cetera. And we made, you know, some good strides by bringing in more sort of systematic approaches to how you change outcomes for patients. And as one example, this is looking at our mortality rate compared to state and national averages. We're significantly lower than both. We've lowered our mortality rate by over 40% in the 7 years since I arrived, not taking personal credit for that, but it was just the focus and energy of the team. We've done the same thing with readmissions, again, dramatically below state and national averages. And in fact, Mission Hospital, don't be fooled by this slide, Mission Hospital was the best performing hospital for readmissions because the hospital for special surgery doesn't count. They only do orthopedics. You know, it's like, you know, only hiking on a flat surface. So, and Lou Shapiro, who runs the hospital for special, which is a great hospital, but he even acknowledges, although off the record, that it's not the same thing. Lots of platitudes from various ranking organizations. The one that I pay the most attention to is the IBM Watson-Truven methodology for top 15 health systems. As I understand it, we're the only health system that's ever received that recognition in 5 out of 6 years. We began receiving it 2 years after I arrived, and we've only missed 1 year in the interim between that. That's a multi-attribute approach that looks at comparative benchmarking around not just quality, but efficiency, patient satisfaction, the whole nine yards. Our system ops team this morning just had a deep dive into every nuance behind the 2017 ranking. We have five key strategies. I'm only going to talk about one. But just briefly, becoming a truly great place to work and practice because we believe in the long run it's human capital that's going to differentiate the winners from the non-winners, so to speak. Number two, and this was the first time I ever put a strategic imperative above the quality imperative. So quality dropped to number two, which is to provide the safest, highest quality care in the nation when, where, and how desired by consumers. Number three is to achieve long-term financial stability. I don't know if this is a Don Quixote approach or if it's something that we can actually achieve, but we're going to keep at it. And targeted growth, and then the one that matters to you all in the room, how to effectively grow and manage our at-risk population. And you may not know, but is Geisinger still a member? Yeah, yeah. Hey, there you are. Hey, awesome. So I came here from Geisinger, which was a fantastic place. It is still, as far as I know, a fantastic place. And I had sort of a transformational experience there, you know, not unlike Saul on the road to Damascus, right? It was a complete conversion. I hated health plans. I still hate Blue Cross, but no, just a joke. In working side by side with Rick Gefilin for 5.5 years, I was completely transformed about what you can do when you have not only a clinical enterprise focusing on a particular direction, but a payer partner and collaborator, an important contributor, doing the same thing. And we didn't just try to do it. You know, we wrote about it. I spoke about it nationally around primary care in particular in various forms of literature. And still to this day, this is my most prideful newspaper headline that I ever received, also one of the only positive ones I ever got. And it wasn't just for me, but we, through the health plan, enabled all the teachers to get a raise and resolve a strike. And I'm never giving up this slide, no matter what Blue Cross does. I mean, no matter what else happens as we go forward. But when I came to Mission, it was literally like that book, which I never read, but, you know, got a lot of attention about men are from Mars, women are from Venus, or vice versa, whichever one it was. There was no primary care anything associated with Mission. Like, there were primary care doctors, and they were out there, but nobody talked to them. They weren't particularly part of the system. There was no infrastructure. There was no nothing. And so I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with this, right? I've been working with a community practice service line that's high performing for 5.5 years. I got to do something. And so I just started making stuff up to buy time. And I don't know how many people are old enough in the room to remember Johnny Carson. There were times, I think 3 or 4 times, if you go through all the Carson series, where he was doing his monologue, and the thing is just bombing. And he literally starts like doing a soft shoe, you know, and the band plays. So this is what I was doing. I was just making stuff up to sort of get some attention and focus around primary care. So I said, we're going to create a primary care council. What's it do? Who knows? We're going to figure it out. And you could see the degree of trust in this member who I invited. He says, thanks for the nice note and the invitation. I would be glad to participate in that group based upon your assurance that we have a seat at the adult table, not at the kids' table. And it's not an ancillary group or just there for show. So we started that, knowing that there had to be some outcome. A year later, we had what I just literally made up out of whole cloth, the first ever Western North Carolina Primary Care Summit. And we had Paul Grundy from IBM at the time come and speak, and a number of other speakers. But get this, stripe me down. We had 100 primary care doctors on a Saturday, and they were not paid to come. So it was an amazing phenomenon for this region. And we had this summit, over 100 people. The satisfaction ratings were off the roof. They included stuff like, I didn't know anybody cared about us. I didn't know anything, you know, that we were going to matter. You've given us some new hope. And then I completed my promise when I formed the Primary Care Council, which was, we established primary care as a formal service line equal to cardiology and orthopedics and, you know, so forth and so on. But that was just a precursor to get us to the point where we could actually do something useful. And as you all know, and I'm preaching to the choir here, you know, getting from our fee-for-service system across into that value-based nirvana with unicorns and butterflies and Bambi and, you know, all that, it is a challenging road or bridge to cross. And we knew that we needed to create a clinically integrated network, and I didn't want to invest into acquiring all these primary care practices. I wanted to pull in the independent docs that were part of our region, and Developing a program and a platform that you can actually do something with, as you all know, takes a lot of work. And it's not just about having docs that are engaged, but you need all those other infrastructure components and performance objectives and IT systems and so forth. So you still look good, Mark. We formed our clinically integrated network with, how many was it at the time, 200 or... Yeah, so 200 primary care docs, the majority of which were not mission-employed docs, but independent docs. And we began to go about our work. And I think in the short time we've had, we've done a pretty decent job. This was from our year one MSSP, comparing us to all of the average of all of the ACOs that have been around forever or new. We exceeded the performance on almost all of them. We tied for three, and we were only below that national average on one. And the population health impact, just in 6 months of that segment, as you know, you all know, 4,700 more adults had their medication lists updated, 876 people received a pneumococcal vaccine, 5,200 got, you know, all that stuff that, for me, that's what gives me joy. That's what makes me get up in the morning and say, yeah, I'm going to keep at it, no matter what Blue Cross does. No, did I mention that? We had a pretty aggressive timeline. I thought it was slow, but others thought, you know, so that within, we started in April, we had 260 PCPs by July. That was a lot more than that signing ceremony date. We went live with the ACO and 42,000 members, so that was a non-trivial sized ACO at the time. We added our employees' independence. Then a contract with Humana, another contract with Humana, and we filed a Medicare Advantage product just less than 2 years from the time of forming the integrated network. We don't have a lot of members, less than 100. Mark visits them each morning, and I have tea with them in the afternoon. So it's a way to really engage very aggressively and closely with those individuals, but it's going to get better. Our challenge, which is why for us Medicare Advantage is such an important thing as opposed to the ACO, is that we're an extraordinarily low-spending area. So if anybody saw that 2015 New York Times article that said, all the places that people have told you are low-cost really aren't, they just screw the commercial insurers by cost-shifting. Not making any comments about guys here. We were actually one of the handful of places in the entire United States, not the only one, but one of a very small few, that was, we were 33rd lowest out of 306 communities in Medicare and 32nd lowest in commercial. So our beneficiary spend was only $8,000 in this last time period. And, you know, the range was from something like 7,000 something up to 22,000. And the interesting thing is, which again, most of you probably know, right, what your benchmark is largely determines whether you're going to get a gain share or not. Statistically, in 2015, the average benchmark for those that got a gain share was $11,393. Those that didn't get a gain share, the average was $99.86, and we're almost $2,000 below the average that didn't. Okay, that's where sort of healthy state came in, because I was saying, look, the ACO for us is a training wheel program. Like, we're not actually going to succeed. It's very hard to succeed. But if you fall off the bike, it's not a big deal. And so Healthy State, and Mark is responsible, and Alexandra and Jean and others, for actually making this thing work. And am I into yours? Because I feel like I'm missing one of mine. Okay. did you move anything around?
No.
Okay.
But you can go on.
So I'll just finish. That I'm not allowed to tell you because it's embargoed, but I feel very confident that there will be a good outcome notwithstanding our low benchmark, which is actually rather extraordinary in my opinion. We have made incredible strides. I mean, the team members that have engaged from these guys who I appreciate every moment of every day, to our independent docs who've stepped up and really, engaged full force. Some of the work we're doing with social determinants, putting social determinants into our predictive modeling algorithms for forecasting high utilizers that wouldn't otherwise show. It's just been amazing. It's been a fun journey. Now, tell them how it's working.
Very good. Thank you, Ron. So, you know, one of the things that we thought about as we were investing in the ACO, I'm going to tell a little story about how this transpired with our CFO. I met Charles Askew, if any of you know him. He looks like a Southern governor. He's got the snow white, perfectly coiffed hair. Really wonderful guy. But when it comes to finances, he wants to know, do you know your numbers? So I started in April of 2014, and I went to see him, and I said, hey, listen, Charles, I got this great idea for you. We're going to become an ACO. And he goes, well, I've heard about this. Tell me more about that. I said, it's a great deal. What happens is that we cut your revenue by a dollar. We're gonna then, if that's savings, we're going to give 50% of that to CMS. We're going to get to keep 50%, but then we're going to split half of that with the doctors. And he said, so you're going to take a dollar of my revenue, you're going to give me back a quarter when my fixed costs are somewhere around 45 cents or so. He threw me out of his office right after that, we've since patched the fences. But the point of that story, which was apparently not funny at all, is that the investment in an ACO does not actually have a financial benefit typically to the organization that puts them together, and it's because it's an unfunded program, right? It doesn't generate any revenue unless you get the gain share. So one of the things that we thought about is how do we leverage and monetize that asset? So we created Healthy State a little over a year ago. It's a for-profit subsidiary of Mission Health. Mission Health is our sole shareholder, and for the foreseeable future will remain so. But we did create it in such a way that if we ever felt like we wanted to go to the capital markets, we could do that given the structure that we put in place. Its entire charge is really to function as a brokerage and a health plan bolted together, representing marketing and sales of the health benefits, largely in the ASO business in the 26-plus. We also sell Medicare Advantage product. Is First Carolina's here?
They left.
So our friends in Pinehurst with First Carolina's have essentially entered into a very unique partnership with us, whereby we have products and services that we have built with them. We've worked with our actuaries to get them priced. They are branded as Healthy State, and they will be coming live this year. As Ron mentioned, we only had 85 members in our first year, and that's really because when we got the deal done, we were really late into the season. We couldn't change the marketing materials. We ended up branding it as First Carolina Cares and First Medicare Direct. We didn't have the opportunity to really change the marketing materials to gear toward Western North Carolina. Took a long time to get the broker channel put together. By the time we educated them, we'd really essentially missed the season. But for those 85 members, they are all doing pretty well, except for Mrs. Smith, who lost her cat. If anybody has seen a cat wandering, it's a big deal. We work on social determinants all the time. That's important to her. And so the Medicare Advantage product for this year, we have really good feelings for that. We have a number of folks on the team that we didn't have last year, and we think we're going to do very well as we head in. And we'll report out the next time we all meet how we did on our open enrollment. Every organization says they're going to change the way healthcare is financed. We're very serious about that. We are integrating and streamlining the processes that will improve the access and care efficiency. And we do that really through the relationship that we have with the ACO. And, you know, I'll expand on that in just a bit. We align the incentives and within the overall stakeholder mix. One of the things that was a little controversial when we started the ACO was that not only did I tell Charles he was going to get a quarter for every dollar that he lost, I also said I'm going to need $1.6 million to give away to physicians in the community. And he said, you know, that was as he was throwing me out of the office by the collar. But the reason for that was really important, because we created a quality incentive program. We set a remarkably low bar at the time. It was around the 50th percentile nationally. There was a lot of controversy over that too. Isn't that too low? The issue, though, was that we wanted to design it in a way that we didn't want to set it too high and have people just throw up their hands and say, I'm never going to earn the money anyway. We set it at 50% where we thought everybody would go, we can easily do that. In first year out, we had a 95% quality score in the ACO, and we distributed all of that $1.6 million. Now, In fairness, a third of that came back because 90 of the primary care physicians are mission employed physicians, and they are part of the network. But you know, still $1 million that went out to our community physicians to align them with us and help grow the network. The network count right now is 325 or so for primary care physicians and 1,100 physicians in total. I'm going to skip this because this is stuff you all know, but employers are demanding better health plan offerings. Healthy State addresses those employer challenges with alternate funding options. We're really talking in that middle market segment, single-sided groups, 50 to 300, saying if you're fully insured now, that's foolish. You're leaving a lot of money on the table, so let's talk to you about a level-funded product or a self-insured product. We offer them lower administrative and service costs through the work with our partners. We have an intense focus on the population health side to improve the health and quality of their population, and we can now demonstrate that with our own employees where we have had very low trends for the last couple of years, and an announcement that will be coming out that I can't talk about because it's embargoed, maybe next week. And then we have lower discounts because since we're owned by a hospital system, the hospital system has given us preferential pricing relative to other payers, including, did you mention Blue Cross today? So we look very good when we're out doing our quotes. What's a little different, and I don't know how many health plans here, does any of the membership here have direct salespeople where all you do in the commercial space? Yeah? How do you find that works relative to the broker channel?
Northeast Pennsylvania, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre is a little bit of an odd community. Mm-hmm. About 30% of our small group sales is direct.
Okay.
And about 15% of our large group.
Perfect. So what we have found in our market, Blue Cross dominates the market, not dissimilar from other markets. They have about 72% market share here. The reason we've been referencing Blue Cross is that part of the reason we've been running as fast and furious as we are is that we're in a pretty big battle as a system with Blue Cross with a termination in place and going out of network in about 9 days here. They have been telling their brokers, you know, stand firm, don't move. Everything's going to be fine, even though we're not talking, we're not negotiating, and they say they won't talk to us until after the termination takes full effect. So for 3 months, radio silence. And so you have these employers who are faced with knowing that we're going to be out of network and somehow believing their broker and believing Blue Cross that they should stay. Our view is that nobody can sell our product better than we can. Nobody can explain it better than we can. And so we have a direct sales force, and we exclusively are doing that at this point. In a commercial space. We are using GAs in the Medicare Advantage space because the dynamics are vastly different. Those guys are truly independent as opposed to the brokers who get most of their revenue from Blue Cross. The rest of that is stuff that you all are doing, so I won't dive any deeper into this slide. Our product vision is really three big buckets. The first one is the healthcare delivery side, where we look at the network, which is Mission Health Partners, our ACO, and the care coordination capabilities that we have within that. And care coordination in this sense includes the analytics that we do, it includes the phone calls that we make, it includes the nurses and the pharmacists and the LCSWs and the community paramedics and all the assets that we deploy to manage care. But all of that healthcare delivery stuff with the physicians and the hospitals that are all part of the network is contained in that Mission Health Partners ACO network structure. The healthcare management side, the way we think about that is really in a couple of ways. We have an intense focus on the wellness. We've had a wellness program for our own employees. We're the largest employer west of Charlotte. So we have 10,000 employees that are in the health plan, 18,000 total with the dependents included. And we have a very robust wellness program. Again, this is another asset that was essentially a benefit to our employees, but it had not been monetized. And so now, when we go out and talk to employers, we're saying, if you really want to have an impact on your cost, the best thing to do is get people well. Let us help you do that. And so we bake that in. We are big on trying to make sure that we have employee engagement through that. And as I mentioned in an earlier slide, in terms of aligning the incentives, we partnered with a technology company that has the ability to throttle up or throttle down an employer's contributions to the premium based on how they perform within a wellness program that we design in conjunction with the employer. And then lastly, integrating the finance and delivery, we have offered the self-insured products. We have really pushed with our employers that if we can't perform, some of our fees should be at risk. In one case, one that we're working on now, we've said, you know what, we're so confident that we can save you money, we'll put it all at risk. And then in the fully insured space, obviously we are at risk for that. We treat all of the patients that we have exactly the same, except for Mrs. Smith. I'm still looking for her cat. So I've alluded to this a little bit, but monetizing the clinically integrated capabilities of the network, I've told you why it was not a great investment. The good about a clinically integrated network, or MHP for us, is that it does build the risk management skills that we need. So we have an intense focus on studying the analytics, risk stratifying. One thing that's interesting that we're doing that you might find interesting as well is if you remember from the marketing days, or marketing classes that you had in business school, they always talked about certain categories of people, right? You hear in sort of our colloquial vernacular, the soccer mom or Joe Sixpack, right? Those represent characteristics of people that are in a community. So soccer mom is, got 2.5 kids. She's driving a nice SUV. She's engaged in her community. She might be with the PTA, right? And so if you're trying to market to that type of demographic, that's what you do. We thought, well, that's kind of an interesting concept. We're working with a marketing firm who takes all of that type of data and meshes that up with our clinical information. What that does for us is that lets us know that people who are struggling to, if they don't have a car, or if they do have a car and they're not buying gas, those sorts of things start showing up in these reports that link back to patients that might have a high-risk strata on their clinical side. And so by looking at this information, it clues us in as to whether or not somebody has a social determinant that is adversely impacting their ability to access care. And then we deploy resources to try to fix those problems. We have just begun that. We're seeing some early results. We don't have the empirical stuff yet. But as that matures, I'd love to come back and at some point share that with you and see if that would be helpful to all of you as well. I've talked about how the Medicare ACO is not a business, even with Gainshare, which we're probably going to get, but I can't talk about it because it's embargoed. Even with that, it would not cover the investment that we've done over the last 3 years. And so you have to find other ways to leverage that asset and make it more meaningful, and we do that by using that in the insurance offerings that we have. A little more color on this. That green part of the pie, that is the portion of the population that MHP manages. So about 90,000 people, a little more than 1 in 10 Western North Carolinians are managed by the ACO. Only that little slice actually has revenue attached to it. And that means like management fees and so forth. There's also upside with all of those arrangements that we have with the various payers. But everything else, you can see the light gray is our actual own employee health plan. So it's sort of a left pocket, right pocket thing. There's compensation that goes on, but it's not really, to my shareholder mission, it's not new money, right? And then the ACO is the larger dark portion of that particular pie graph. You're in Asheville, so we had to put a yin and yang thing up here. So we actually brought this down off the web just because some of the things that it said really, I thought, reflected the interdependency that we had between the two organizations, MHP and Healthy State. They are, in fact, complementary. They are, in fact, interconnected and interdependent upon one another. MHP certainly needs us to figure out ways to generate revenue and become self-sustaining. But if you flip it the other way, without MHP, we have nothing to sell, right? We sell based on price. We sell based on network. We sell based on quality. If we don't have MHP, we wouldn't be in business. So we are certainly yin and yang in that respect. We have very shared values. This we share with not only MHP, which is owned by the system, but just the system generally. Service to our community is incredibly important to all of us. Supporting the practice of independent medicine is important because we really don't want to buy up all the practices that are in the region. What we know is there are times where we have to buy a practice because we need to keep that specialty in our rural communities, and it wouldn't be here if somebody didn't do that. And so we acquire assets when we feel that we need them to meet the needs of the community. We don't do it as a matter of a need for business. We would prefer every practice be independent if we could, but the economics just don't make that possible. We all share the triple aim perspectives. We share the idea of a sustainable population health management environment and ensuring that Mission can cross that chasm, that rickety bridge that Ron showed you before. I just realized those colors probably don't help, so I will describe those for you, and you probably can't read them in the small print of the handouts, but our emphasis is not dissimilar from many of you. We have patients that are in the unmanaged chronic and acute events. We spend a disproportionate amount of our time working in that space because well-controlled diabetics cost a lot less than uncontrolled diabetics. We try to make sure that we avoid things that will drive to an acute event. We move toward managed chronic illness, but we don't stop there. We think that early entry to care is the next best thing to prevention, at least in terms of cost. So we spend a fair amount of time closing those gaps in care. It looks like you're really focused on the quality measures, but the reality is those quality measures are tightly controlled to medical cost. You've seen that in other literature, and we've experienced it on a day-to-day. Skip that one. The economics of the agreement as it pertains to Mission. A lot of people have been asking of late, sometimes we get this from board members, sometimes it's just people in the community, so why would you go and create a health plan? What's the point here? The point is that we can set the pricing of our health plan products at margins that exceed the discount that we get from the system, still provide value to the employer, but now create additional revenue streams for the health system. I tend to think of Mission as my shareholder. I'm a finance guy in my undergraduate work, did a master's degree in entrepreneurship. In every finance class that you ever take, the first thing they tell you is your job is to maximize shareholder value, so I take that very seriously. The beauty here is that my shareholder is also concerned about quality, so maximizing that is important as well. But when the sum of the claims and the reinsurance and the fees and everything else is less for the employer, everybody wins in this scenario, and I have a little bit of a graphic here that will show you that. So this would be the claims pick that we would do for a given provider. So we pull all their claims, we run it through our repricing model, and we say, well, this is what we think it's going to cost you based on your historic experience, but now utilizing our unit cost differential. In addition to that, we add the cost of reinsurance, because in every case, most of the folks that we're going after, it's their first step into self-insurance. We want to make sure, because they're not, you know, large enough to carry the risk themselves, that they're well protected from a stop-loss perspective, so we stack that on top. We have our own administration fees. I will not use green the next time we have these PowerPoints. but those are administrative fees paid by the employer to the health system. And then the delta really here is the savings for the employer if you compare it to what a premium might have been in the fully insured space. I know this is all old hat for you guys. The value proposition for Mission, though, might not be as obvious if you spent most of your time on the health plan side. So the hospital looks at the reimbursement that is there. You compare that to what would otherwise be a competitive rate. You put the administrative fees that we have collected from the employer and passed on to the system, and now you have what is effectively new revenue streams for the system through that. So these are population health fees. These are wellness fees. These are, chronic care management fees. All of these things that we do in the ACO that's being supported by the system are compensated by the employer. So in terms of, healthcare management, the way we think about it today, it's, you know, it used to be that you just deployed a lot of clinicians and you worked really hard on the really sick people. But we think about it in terms of the way you integrate finance and delivery of healthcare coverage, really holding the provider accountable for quality and cost, and we pay for that. That's how we drive the changes in the network. It differs from the current state where the insurer bears the risk and the providers are paid fee for service. You've got that constant tension of, well, I'll just do more stuff over here to raise my revenue. No, we really want you to stop that so we can build our margins over here. We've eliminated that tension in the relationship we have within the integrated model. We also address the demand for health care. I used to use an expression among my colleagues on the senior team, so I have a couple of hats. You know, this morning I was with the senior team and wearing my senior vice president of the system hat, and I would say things like, destroying the demand for health care services. If you sell health care services, that makes you very nervous. Talk to an orthopedic service line and tell them that you want to destroy demand. They're not going to be real happy with you. You guys have had a long day, I can tell. I'll just keep going. Social determinants to reduce demand for care. Education, certainly, but we do more than just four-color processing, right? This is not about mailing things out to people. This is making sure they have access to resources that can truly help them. We spend a lot of time focusing on the social and behavioral health issues. Why? Because somebody who is depressed is not likely to access care. If they don't access care, they'll get sicker. They get sicker, they're going to cost more. All the things that we know, but we take it further than that. We look to see whether or not people have food insecurity issues. We look to see whether they have transportation issues. We've just launched a pilot called Rideshare. It's an Uber-like thing. I see a lot of nodding here, so that's good. It's for $20, we can move somebody from one place to the other without having to wait for the mobility services and getting stuck somewhere. We just say, call the nurse who's working with that patient or the LCSW, contacts the patient, says, there's going to be an Uber out front in 15 minutes. Take the car, go to your appointment. When your appointment is done, let me know. We'll get another one, and they'll take you home. That kind of stuff is unthinkable in a fee-for-service world where you're just trying to raise money for the next offices or what have you. But if you're trying to control cost and you're working within a space of a capitated environment, it makes a tremendous amount of sense. And so we're testing all of these kinds of new and innovative ideas. The insurance market and pop health. You may or may not agree with me, but in my 25 years of experience on the health plan side, the way I always saw this was, I worked for Aetna and I worked for Coventry. Usually the way the customers looked at things is they wanted the biggest network that you could possibly get because they didn't want Susie coming in and saying, you don't have my pediatrician, and right? They wanted the lowest cost, which is totally in conflict with the first one, but that's another story. Quality from their vantage point was really just, we'll look at the static measures. Let's look at HEDIS. I don't know. I don't know anything about quality. I just want low cost and nobody coming into my office to complain. That's how the decision maker thought about this. And really the decision maker is just the aggregator of a bunch of individuals, right, and if they're an employer. In the population health market, we see it quite a bit different. All we really want to do is make sure that we have your doctor in the network. We don't need them all. And we need the best. We need those that have the demonstrated clinical outcomes, demonstrated service solutions. We don't think about cost the way that we used to. Oh, this guy wants 120% of Medicare. Let's not give it to him. Well, we might give it to him if he's got a fantastic downstream cost structure, right? On the other hand, if not, we might not have him in the network at all. So we make decisions based on that. And the consumer choice is a much bigger piece of this. You know, I think it still comes down to how much is it going to cost me? Is my doctor in the network? And is the product any good? And if you can demonstrate yes on all three of those, we think that we win in the marketplace. This is not an exhaustive list of all the things that MHP does, but the network is in charge of the care coordination side. We use Athena as our backbone on the technology side. As I mentioned to you, we have a multidisciplinary team that's working on that, up to and including community health workers and those kinds of things. That's important on the Medicare side, will be important on the Medicaid side as we move into that. We have comprehensive health and wellness programs, the analytics, the employee engagement, proper incentives, on and on. You can read the list. I think we've hit on this too, the integration of finance and delivery aligns those goals of the healthcare delivery model with that of the payer and the employer. Every time we make a decision around contracting and network development and so forth, those are foremost in our minds. Creating the opportunities for the providers to invest in the things that we know will work is what we're all about. If we can get to a stage where people start thinking about programs like the rideshare and say, you know what, if that'll keep people out of the hospital, that's great. Everybody's got their stories. We had one recently. Lovely elderly lady was in the emergency room for the fourth or fifth time in a row, and somebody said, you know, didn't I see you here last week? And yeah, I was here. So why are you back today? Why, I need to get my insulin. I gave you a lot of insulin the last time you were here. Yeah, it has to be cold. Poor thing didn't have a refrigerator, right? So here's a lady who, she's doing the right thing. She's trying to manage her care, but she's coming to the emergency room, a very expensive place to get this stuff done. Wouldn't it be great if somebody figured out that instead of $500 a pop at the emergency room, let's give her a $300 refrigerator that's very nice, and she can put other stuff in it, like fresh fruits and vegetables and those kinds of things. So that's a big part of the work that that we think about and we build toward heading into the future. Ron mentioned that we didn't want to spend a fortune with building out all of our capabilities. So to start an insurance company from scratch, to jump right into the insurance market, thinking about all the systems that we'd have to buy and the buildings and the people and all these kinds of things, it was an unthinkable prospect for an organization that you know, really is a safety net system and taking care of people regardless of their ability to pay. So on the build versus buy, we decided to buy. Another slide you can't read, but so Healthy State is involved in the ASO business, the commercial insured soon, and the Medicare Advantage business today. We use various partners for that. Healthcare Interactive is our front-end technology, benefit administration, wellness, look up your claims provider. That's what they do for us in the ASO and in the commercial space. For the ASO business, where you're using MedCost. MedCost is an organization here in North Carolina. They've been doing claims for, I think, 30 years or so. Rated one of the best, certainly well above Blue Cross. I don't know if I mentioned there was a thing going on with it. Anyway, they are loved by providers and payers, patients alike. They do a fantastic job, and they're incredibly responsive to us as we need to do new products and services through them. The health system, we have an MSA services agreement with them for all sorts of back office stuff, so IT, legal, compliance, all the things that you need, we just rent that from the health system. And so we have those costs allocated to us based on a contract that we have in place. I talked about the relationship we have with the clinically integrated network, and then we have various reinsurers that are in place in order to mitigate the risk that we are starting to take on. Until we get comfortable with it, we're going to offload as much of that as possible to make sure that the upside is assured and the downside is protected. On the Medicare Advantage side, I mentioned our partnership with the folks in Pinehurst with First Carolina Cares, terrific folks to work with, and sorry I missed them today. Maybe I'll see them tomorrow. So what are we doing together? If you try to boil all this down into something that you know, gets a schematic, the purchasers and the providers on the opposite ends of this thing, you know, to the purchasers, we provide clinical outcomes for them, which, you know, implies the lower cost, it implies the services that are there, and they're paying for value. And in the middle, we try to make sure that the primary care physician and the patient are tied together, and around that we wrap through the ACO, the aligned incentives, the clinical care management model, the integrated health and wellness programs that we have, actionable information. I won't get into my my sidebar that I do on actionable information, but the synopsis is we're awash in information. We rarely find what is actionable, and so I could do 20 minutes on that. And then the last thing is, if you look at the way we've gone about it, all the blue here is Mission Health Partners, the ACO. That encompasses the network, the clinical and technical infrastructure, the wellness program, and the physician-directed strategy. So that was our first block that we did. We've added the risk-bearing insurance solutions on the right-hand side. On top of all that, we stacked the product array. The degrees of financial risk that we're undertaking begin with the ASO, pay-for-performance, bundles, capitation, pop health, and insured. Healthy State's picking up in that sort of last two chevrons on the right. Everything else was our journey toward population health. So the ACO and Healthy State together, they serve multiple purposes. It is preparing Mission in our community because of the independent physicians that we have engaged for risk bearing. It maximizes the value even in the traditional model. So a lot of the things that we're doing are helping even at the system level to avoid penalties, The system has done tremendous amounts of work to reduce readmissions and so forth. We're adding and contributing to that work through what we do. Every care process model that the system creates, we adopt in the ACO, which then becomes part of the overall care delivery system. If we're successful, when we're successful, provides a source of funds for the underserved community. 15% of the people that live in our region are still uninsured. So we see them regardless of their ability to pay, but that's a big burden for us as a system. And if we can generate a profitable business line that helps push money back to the parent to take care of those folks, that's a core of our values. Together, it builds an even better brand of quality and outcomes. Creates economic opportunity by keeping dollars here instead of going off to Raleigh or Hartford, Connecticut, or Minneapolis. Those are headquarters of people that, yeah. Anyway. All right, and that's it. So, questions for Ron or I? Yes?
So forgive me, I don't know the distribution model in North Carolina, but you're the health insurers. Is there a model for distribution primarily brokers and agents, or do they have a mix of direct as well? And if it is primarily brokers and agents, how are you going to get around the dysfunctional world of, well, I play fantasy football with my broker. I couldn't possibly entertain an offer from somebody else.
So about 45 minutes ago, you would have seen me a little bit energized because we were pursuing a case that by all rights should have supported us, given that they are part of what I call friends and family in the community. They elected to stay with Blue Cross for, I think, exactly that reason. This group has just under 2,000 members. We were showing them, based on their renewal, a $1.7 million improvement in total costs, so admin and medical costs and pharmacy and all the things that we could do. And guess what they said? Yeah, we have made our decision, and we're going to stay with Blue Cross. So it happens. My thinking is that over time what we'll see is there are thought leaders that we're beginning to pick up. We have a great partnership with MAHEC, and I don't know if you all know what that is, but it's the Mountain Area Health Education. Is it a cooperative or a coalition?
Center, I think.
Center. They train the physicians in this region. In fact, 60% of the primary care physicians that are in the region were trained there, which is just astounding. They were one of our first clients to join us, and they've been out in the community talking about the value that we've created for them and how happy they are with the solutions. It's going to be a slow grind, but I think what's going to happen is as we continue to pound away at this, eventually people will start to realize, is it really worth $1.7 million a year to keep my broker that I do fantasy football with or not? It's going to be a tough slog, but we're up for the challenge and we're going to continue. To answer your first part of your question is, it's exclusively broker-driven, but in effect, they control these brokers because 72% of the market is Blue Cross and they're selling those products. Anything to add to that? Yes.
One's a clarification. So you don't use brokers at all on any line of business?
We use brokers on Medicare because I see that as different. They are truly independent. They are out for the season. Okay. Everybody pays them the same. But in the commercial side, we're direct only.
So as I'm looking at your commercial model that is primarily self-funded, mm-hmm. how do – and you have a discount significant enough with your delivery system,
yep.
so they're taking less,
yep.
and they have contracts with other people – how do you leverage the population health infrastructure when you're passing that savings right on to the employer?
So our fee stack is deeper. So we're not going to be around $15 and only $15. We have a pop health piece okay. that goes into that. We have the wellness program that is pure to us. It's a sunk cost for us. So when we sell it, anything we make. So we have the other pieces on the admin side that come up on the other piece of this. In the level funded, we of course share in the upside with the employer group, and because we have those lower costs, part of their savings is the lower reinsurance premium. So when you look at their value, there's lots of little slices that stack up to something decent. We get on the other side of it, net back to the system, we're actually slightly net positive.
How much of that's driven by margin, you know, accepted margin across the whole premium? And how much is driven by layering your healthcare management by the piece?
So that's a big part of the sales process, is explaining to them that our admin fees as a percentage of your spend is larger, but your total spend is going to be lower. So it takes a lot more education, a lot more walking people through. It usually starts with, give us your claims, let us reprice that and show you that and see how much money you saved. And in order to get the savings, we're going to have to do these things. And oh, by the way, we have demonstrated performance through the ACO that can show we're going to bend your utilization cost curve and make those dollars even better. So it's a tougher sell, to be sure. It's a, we're not going to look great on a spreadsheet, but in a one-on-one sale, if we can get the CEO or CFO in the room, we have a pretty good shot. Yeah.
On that case, were you looking at equivalent products? I mean, because if I'm doing my quick math right, you're talking, you know, you were 10 points under your competitor.
That's right.
And Mark and I kind of have a bet that at 10 points under, you can move a lot of business. And you're saying you still couldn't move the client. I mean, does that put into question the strategy? I mean, is it just too entrenched? We're only 3 hours away from you in Dalton there. Well, I guess four. And the broker community is so entrenched. I just can't imagine going after that, so it takes a lot of chutzpah, A. So who was the guy with the chutzpah that said, like, hey, all right, let's do this? And then second, and this is more of a question about your interactions with your CFO, has he completely come around to this, and what was the reasoning? Because my reasoning is always, well, my hospital system's biggest problem at the end of the day is still that they have empty beds, mm-hmm. no matter what. They've still got capacity. And to the extent that we can fill capacity, I could sell that to the system all day long.
Sure. Do you want to take that last half of that question?
Yeah, on the last half, if we don't change the insurance market from a single monopoly of Blue Cross, we'll ultimately succumb to death, right? That and I don't mean that in a negative way towards it. We just, right? I mean, they're telling us right now, you're going to take below zero rate increase over the next 3 years. We're going to cut you, and you're going to be happy about it, and get used to it. So there has to be a change. They are unable or unwilling or some combination of the two to engage in activities that would generate a benefit for both them and for us. And so, you know, it's easier to have chutzpah when certain death is the alternative, right? I gotta believe, and I'll continue to believe until I'm just worn down, that there are thoughtful people who can spend more than 5 minutes thinking about something and can appreciate that it's not a unit price game, it's a price times volume game, and it's really about ultimately impacting the outcomes of those people that you call employees, and we've demonstrated our ability to do it, and we're going to get better at it over time.
Yeah, it's hard to follow that, but to your more basic question of how do you not move the business when you've got 10 points, there's a few things. One is we are, in air quotes, brand new, right? So people see Healthy State and they go, well, what is this thing? And so we're still building brand recognition and getting people to understand. We are using ambassadors from the boards and thought leaders in the community to try to get that message out. But everybody's nervous, right? It's like, well, we don't really know about you guys. So we're working on our messaging better now. Alexander will tell you that when we first tried to describe to ourselves what is Healthy State, we spent an hour just sort of wandering around what this all came up to be. We've got that down to much more of an elevator pitch now. The second thing is that when we go out and talk to employers now, we're trying to point out to them that MedCost has been around for 30 years. I'm a lot older than I look. They like your jokes much better than mine. I don't understand.
It's on the delivery.
It's in the delivery. Timing is everything. So I think in time we're going to find that, as we get success in the marketplace, case by case, one by one, those that we have on the books now are thrilled. They're talking to other people. It's going to be like that shampoo commercial years ago. They told two friends and so on. I'm just going to give up on the jokes. It's all you.
Good strategy.
We talked a lot about sort of the naming of the health plan and how that affects when you have the same name across the plan as the delivery system. Mm. and the experience. And I was just curious, because you're new and you have Mission Health as a system and Mission Health Partners as the ACO, why did you decide to go with Healthy State as the name of the plan as opposed to tying it into the name of the system?
Great question. I'll give you an opportunity on this too. But our marketing team, which is really an astounding group of people here at the system, did an analysis, and they surveyed people to find out how do they feel about Mission, the parent. And it was interesting what we found is that if you were healthy, wealthy, and you lived in Buncombe County, which is where you are, the most populous state, you were either neutral to, actually in some cases, negative. If you were somebody who was seeking services from us, if you were rural, if you were poor, you thought Mission was, you know, nirvana. It was the best thing ever. So that was one piece of the decision. The other piece was is that from a risk selection standpoint, I had done some research to see, well, what's the loss ratio of health plans that have, that are owned by hospital systems? What's the delta? And it was about 160 basis points on the loss ratio. Now, I didn't know if that was due to scale or risk selection or what, but it was enough to make me a little concerned. So with the first piece of data and the intuitive second piece of the data, we decided to go with something that would be neutral. We also wanted it to be something that could be taken other places because of all the infrastructure that we've built. If we find friends, and we do have friends at other systems in the state, that said, hey, we'd love to do this with you, we would be able to take it with us as a neutral name in another market.
Yeah, adverse selection. Mission is brand is, if you're really sick, that's the place you got to go. Two was sending a message about what the model was, and so we believed, for better or worse, that Healthy State had a very different emotional response around, you know, wellness, health, prevention, et cetera, et cetera. And then the most important thing was the brand neutrality relative to leveraging the chassis across a broader market, both within North Carolina and potentially beyond.
So I have a question. So as this is from a shameless vendor plug, but that's for all the vendors here. So as a small, growing, new company like you, we encounter the cost of change sometimes is really underestimated. You can come in cheaper, you can come in faster, stronger, more nimble than a competitor, but sometimes the cost of change is really significant to overcome. And I think the best way to do that is stick to your mission. It shouldn't come down to price. It should really stick down to what makes you different than your competitors, and ultimately, if you are less expensive or even the same, what's really going to separate you is your ability to distinguish yourselves from your competitors in a way that's meaningful to the organization you're selling to and ultimately to the membership that they're working with. So to those that, you know, look at new companies that come into a space or like you that comes into a market, being new has its challenges. And I think the cost of change, especially with the health organizations, is really significant to overcome. And it's even worse as you go downstream into some of the risk-bearing entities or those groups that you're purchasing. So,
are you a motivational speaker by training?
I'm always positive. So I'm just saying, stick to your mission and good things come. And, you know, you'll get people on board and they'll sing your praise. And, I think you guys are on the right track. So congratulations and keep going at it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
You mentioned something at the last meeting. I want to circle back to you about that because I've been dead set against it, and I've told this guy that we were never going to do it, but some things I've read, some things I've thought about, I want to catch up to you.
Well, our president
tomorrow
engenders such trust and confidence in me, that it's the first thing I thought about, but that aside.
Yeah.
And how about that NFL?
Did you get another tweet?
Yeah. Well, thank you and enjoy Asheville.
Thank you, guys. Thank you
all.